Okay, lecture 24 then, Amos overview. The Lord roars and the Lord restores. We've moved into the 8th century. Prophets. His name means burden bearer, and certainly he did have a great burden to reveal God's judgment. Again, you'll see there in some of the key verses, some very well known verses, again, that probably most people didn't know came from Amos. You think that of that chapter 4:12 that I've just spoken of, 5:4. Seek ye me, and ye shall live. So really what's Amos saying, he's saying just as the Gentile nations would be judged for their wickedness, so Israel and Judah would be judged by Assyrian aggression because of their sins. It's actually really communicated in terms of a lawsuit. He's prosecuting, he's bringing evidence, he's bringing them to an unavoidable verdict. And yet, though there's going to be a judgment on Israel and Judah, a judgment even along with the other heathen nations, yet, after their exile, they'll be exalted above their Gentile neighbours. So a little bit about the prophet himself there, called the prophet of justice, the prophet of righteousness, or conscience incarnate. So he's ministering in this reign of Jeroboam the second, maybe you can look at the historical background there at the bottom of page 2. It's a background of great success, great prosperity, great expansion, great materialism, great greed, great oppression, great immorality. There are some outward religious observances, but nothing that could be pleasing to God. The nation is rotten at its core. And there's a lot of corruption, a lot of bribery going on. You can fill out the details yourselves there. I've divided the book there, you'll see, under literary analysis into two, which is not much of a division when you consider that the second is only 4 verses out of 9 chapters. But I think in general terms, though, there are little glimmers of hope throughout chapters 1 to 9, verse 10. You really have to say, well, above all, what you hear in these chapters is the roar of the Lord. But in these last 4 verses of chapter 9, the Lord restores. And the Lord is portrayed as a lion in this book. And I've divided these 2 points up a little bit more there, under A and B. So you've got oracles against the nations, chapter 1 through 2, verse 3, and then oracles against God's people, and I've tried to set it out there in a lawsuit form for you. And really, these lawsuit forms are found throughout the book, sometimes with just a few of the elements, sometimes with more. Then onto thematic analysis, the lion or the Lord roars against the nations, chapters 1 through 2, verse 3. He basically goes round the nations surrounding Israel, pronouncing judgment, the lion roaring against Syria, Philistia, Tyre, Edom, Ammon, Moab. And you've got this unusual formulation for 3 sins and for 4. I'm going to do this. For 3 sins and for 4, I'm going to do that. And really, what Amos is saying here is, God's been patient. He's been merciful. He's been long-suffering. But the time for repayment has now come. It's not just, after one sin, the hammer comes down. But 3, but 4? Well, he's not acting immediately in judgment, but in this time of waiting, which he gives to draw people to repentance, it comes to an end, and then punishment must be administered. And it's interesting, again, in the way he circles round to Judah and Israel. The first 3 nations mentioned there, Syria, Philistia, Tyre, as he goes through chapter 1, they're not blood relatives of Israel. But the last 3 were Edom, Ammon, and Moab. And So you can basically feel he's getting closer to home. He started with non-relatives, then there are distant relatives, and it eventually comes right to home. He's now roaring against Israel and Judah themselves in chapter 2:4 to 3:2. And it really is all summed up with that last phrase, the Lord has roared. Of course, as a shepherd, Amos is very familiar with the dangers of roaring lions and is able to depict this very accurately. So, you know, you've got these people sort of conceitedly, complacently listening to God's judgment. Oh, yes, you know, Tyre, Sidon, Philistia, yes, tut, tut, you know, terrible, terrible. And then the relatives come into the picture, Edom, Moab, Ammon, and you feel them, oh, yes, yes, but maybe sense them, boy, that's getting a bit close. And then, hey, you're not immune yourselves. You're going to be judged in the same way for your covenant disobedience. And that leads us on there on pages 5 and following to the covenant elements of this prophecy. Amos is a covenant emissary. You remember we looked at that under the prophetic book's overview. So he comes and he first of all stresses covenant relationship. Amos 3 verse 2, "You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore, I will punish you for all your iniquities." So it doesn't secure them from judgment. Rather, it increases their responsibility and God's obligation to punish their breaches of the covenant relationship. And then he goes on to speak of their covenant disobedience. The people think, well, we're keeping the covenant. We're doing the Mosaic stuff. But basically, Amos shows that it's all just mechanics. It's all just ritual. It's all just external. And in fact, there are elements even to the external ritual which is disobedient to God. They've introduced a northern cult, a subset of their religion. And then just showing how this religious corruption leads to society's corruption. Hypocritical and worthless religion leads to social injustice. Gross abuses of power and wealth. And, you know, sometimes I think we tend to see, oh, God's judging society, and it's coming closer and closer to the church, and we're beginning to feel the squeeze. And we sort of view it as coming from outside to in. But what the prophets show is that the judgment on the outside is because of the inside circle. The judgment on society is because of the sins of the church. And that's the way God works. Judgment begins at the house of God. And when we see, you know, problems in society, social injustice and breakdown, it's not, oh, these terrible people. It should be us terrible people. You know, we are the cause. The church is the cause. The society reflects the church over, not a day or a week or even a year, but over decades. And again and again, the prophets link that very, very closely. And then covenant curses. God sent these curses, but they've had no impact or little impact. And the curses are all drawn from the Deuteronomic literature. Covenant obedience, top of page 6. Amos really links the survival and welfare of the nation to obedience, to the covenant, but also covenant mercy. So in the midst of all this severe judgment, Amos urges the people to return to the Lord in the hope that perhaps, even now, God would be gracious to them. Amos 5, 14 to 15, "Seek good and not evil, that ye may live. And so the Lord, the God of hosts, shall be with you, as ye have spoken." Interesting, again, the way it's put, "Hate the evil, love the good, establish judgment in the gate. It may be that the Lord God of hosts will be gracious to the remnant of Joseph." Then the day of the Lord, again, no point in going over that again. It's the same themes, two-sided day. Then the remnant restored. So you've got this tension growing in the prophetic books. How come God promised this commitment to his people, and yet how come God's punishing his people? How come he's exiling them? How come he's casting them off? And the way the prophets address this, you might call it a theodicy or theological inconsistency, is through the remnant motif. He's saying, well, you know, God's holiness requires that he will respond in judgment to the sins of the nation, but there will always be a remnant. He will keep his commitment. There will be those who go through the divine judgment, but survive to become the nucleus for the continuation of the people of God, who would inherit afresh God's promises to his people. Now, at times that remnant got pitifully and painfully small. You think of the time just before Christ came. Just a couple of people looking, it would seem, for his coming. And yet through them, the light still shone. Then New Testament analysis, a few points here. Well, again, this the day of the Lord fulfilled. 1 Peter 4:17, though, says, you know, when Christ comes and judgment begins at the house of God. Concern for social justice, New Testament picks up this theme, expands it. How not to differentiate between the rich and the poor, James 2, 1 Corinthians 11. Caring for those in need, not oppressing them, James 1, James 5, and so on. And then you've got that language in Jude 23 of others saved with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment spotted by the flesh. It's taken from, at least the imagery is from Amos 4, verse 11. The way the Israelite remnant was rescued from the disaster, from the fire of God's judgment. Amos 4:11. And then hate evil, love good. Paul quotes that, doesn't he, in Romans 12, verse 9. Apostasy of Israel, when Stephen's describing the character of the Israel of his own day, he uses Amos's language from Amos 5 in Acts chapter 7. But also, he uses restoration language from Amos. Again, you notice how well-versed Paul is in these little books of the Old Testament. Yes, and these are not prepared sermons. He's in the heat of the battle. He's in conflict situations, and yet he's quoting from Amos, you know. Amos 5 and Amos 9. It's just, you know, he eats and breathes these Old Testament scriptures. So you have, for example, the apostle picking it up in Acts 15. After this I will return and will build again the tabernacle of David which has fallen down. And I will build again the ruins thereof. I'll set it up that the residue of men might seek after the Lord. And all the Gentiles upon whom my name is called, saith the Lord, who doeth all these things. Here we've got tremendous hermeneutics, don't we? Just you read that Amos prophet, you think, oh, there's going to be another tent erected somewhere eventually. The tabernacle of David's going to be rebuilt. But the apostle quotes that and says, it's happening. It's happening now. And there's no tabernacle anywhere to be seen. And he's helping us to interpret this in the right way. I think that last quote from Pratt's study Bible is great. Amos spoke of the restoration of David's fallen tent, meaning David's royal dynasty. This prediction indicated that sometime after the exile, a son of David would lead the people of God to victory over the nations and secure for them eternal safety. The prophecy is fulfilled by Jesus, the final royal son of David. Jesus rose to the throne of the house of David in his resurrection and ascension. He reigns now and engages in holy war against the nations through the gospel. Ultimately, he'll defeat all his enemies, establish a worldwide kingdom, when he returns in glory. So you see again the three C's: commencement, continuation, consummation. So the message of Amos: Israel's covenant relationship demands stricter accountability and divine punishment but also secures greater divine blessings of victory and bounty for the repentant remnant in the restoration. And the present message is substitute church for Israel.